You can't see it from there? Good. You don't really need to see it that well. But just a little bit, just to give you kind of an idea. Be making your way to the book of Mark, chapter 12. If you've got a map in the back of your Bible, you may want to hold, especially if you've got a map, you may want to hold Mark chapter 12. And if you've got a map that will give you a diagram or just a brief look at the temple, then that will help. That's all I'm going to hold up. I've got two maps of the temple that I'm going to hold up to kind of give you an idea. If you may not can see this, but it's just the temple area. The whole thing is the temple area, which is called the temple. And if you're familiar, having looked at maps previously, you know that inside this entire compound, there is another fence that surrounds or goes around the primary temple itself. And that primary temple itself has an outer court divided by another wall. And then behind that wall would be where they offer the sacrifices, where the laver is, where they wash their hands. And then you would go into the holy place and then into the most holy place. And the priests were the ones who went into the holy place, and the high priest was the only one who could go into the most holy place. Do you feel better now?
Yes, a little bit.
A little bit. Did you find where you left it?
Yes.
Okay. You feel silly now.
That's why I have it.
Okay. All right. So, Jesus came into the temple and he cleaned it out. The context of this story that we're going to be looking at actually starts a chapter or two before and comes down to Mark chapter 12, which is where the story is. And in the process of this story, in the immediate context, Jesus walks through this compound. When he comes into the major compound is when he cleanses the temple. He gets rid of those that were doing changing of money and selling animals and all to be offered for a sacrifice, and he gets rid of them. And then evidently he walks inside of the next gate going into the temple area itself. And this is going to be even harder to see, and it's probably not going to be that helpful to you. I should have put a slide up, but I didn't. This is the inside of the wall. And I don't know if y'all can see this well enough or not, but it's divided into two sections. This page is the women's court. The women could come through the gate. All of the people would come through the gate and could come into this one court area. But this is where the women had to stop. There were balcony areas built so that the women could look over the next fence and see what was going on inside of the temple area. All around the outside of where the holy place and the most holy place, where the sacrifice was and where the laver were and where the animals were killed, all of that on this side of the temple, around that entire structure, coming all the way around it and up to the next gate, was the men's court. And that's where the men could go. And that may have been where Jesus was having his discussions with the Pharisees and the others. Who gave you the authority to do this? And then Jesus talking about the parables that he tells and asking, when they ask him about who gave you this authority, he says, I'll ask you a question and you answer my question, I'll answer yours. And he talks about different things with them there. And then evidently, he makes his way out of this area where the men's court is, and he goes back into the women's court. And coming back into the women's court, he sits down and he watches. And around this women's court area, there are 13 jars. It's actually clay jars, kind of in the shape of a trumpet. And those 13 jars are where people would go and deposit their gifts or their contributions. And he is sitting down and he is watching as individuals coming in or going out will come and drop into those different containers or those different jars their contributions. There's a lot of discussion about exactly how that took place. Some seem to think that it may have been that there was a priest beside each place, and as an individual gave his gift, then the priest would announce the amount of the gift and how much it was for. I don't really know that that's the case, even though there's some people that think that. And I know it does not have any part whatsoever with the story that we're going to be looking at, because it doesn't say Jesus heard, it says Jesus saw. Not a word said about him listening to what was being done by the woman and by the others, but he saw it. And we'll get into that in just a second. And then from here, Jesus leaves the court area and he walks outside of the temple, walks down the steps, and is heading into the city of Jerusalem when his disciples say, "Look, what a beautiful structure." And Jesus says to them, "I'm telling you the truth. There's coming a time when there will not be one rock left on top of another. This place is going to be destroyed." And so the disciples then pull him aside and they say, "What's the sign of that happening? And what's the sign of your coming?" And then he goes into that discussion about the destruction of Jerusalem and some of the things about the final events. Now, I tell you all of that for one purpose, and that one purpose is this. By the way, you're welcome to come and take a look at my book if you want to take another look at the maps. There's a lot of interesting diagrams and charts and everything in that book, and it's got an excellent diagram and picture of the temple. This entire context starts with Jesus cleansing the temple. "You have turned it into a den of robbers." And it ends with Jesus talking about its destruction. And in the process of getting ready for this lesson, I read something that somebody wrote in a commentary that gave me a thought I have never considered before. And I wanted to share it with you. And the more I think about it, the less I agree with it. The more I think about it, the more I think, no, I just don't think that fits in any way for a lot of reasons. But it makes you wonder that Jesus is talking about the temple and what it's been turned into, and then talking about its destruction. And this commentator, thinking out loud, said, "What was there about this system that would cause this woman to give these two mites everything that she had to live on? Was it guilt created by the system? Was it guilt created by association of giving and making sure you give everything because the temple was interested? Those in charge of the temple were very much interested in the money and making money. And could it be a subtle condemnation of the system by Jesus? Not as God had set it up, but as it had become by men." And Jesus almost hinting at the injustice of this widow because of what she did. But when I think about that and I look at the text again and I read the text, I see no hint of that whatsoever. I see no hint of that going on at all. And I was trying to figure out as best I could, if I could figure out any way at all, as to why this woman gave what she gave. What compelled her to give? And one of the thoughts would be guilt, or a sense of, this is demanded of me by God, and because it's demanded of me by God, I will give it. Boy, that doesn't seem like a cheerful giver. And that doesn't seem like a heart that is where it ought to be. And this commentator latched on to that idea as being the reason why she would have given. But I can think of a lot of other reasons why she would have given what she gave. Can you? What are some you can think of? What are some other things that might have been motives?
She felt blessed.
Whatever may have happened in her life, maybe just looking over her life at all, maybe just the idea of being an Israelite and being one of God's chosen people, maybe something that had happened in her family for good, maybe something she felt personally blessed by. Maybe this was a gift of just simply telling God thank you for what he had done. Can you think of another reason? Her love for God? Ties very closely in with the idea of being thankful for him. Can you think of another reason? She knew she would be taken care of. Jesus makes that promise. Don't worry about what you're going to eat, what you're going to drink. God knows you have need of all those things, and he will take care of you. And that's what he tells us. What about the idea of giving because there was a need? A need that had been announced, or a need that the people of Jerusalem knew about, and it was announced by the priest. We're going to take whatever we have and we're going to give to this special need. I don't know that that would have occurred, but that certainly is something that would affect us, and it has affected all of us. Whenever there's a special need that is announced here at River Chase and an opportunity is given to give, those are usually our largest contributions when there was a special need. A lot of different reasons for why she could have given this amount on this particular occasion. But let's take a look and let's think about the story for just a minute. Jesus comes back out and he goes out into the women's court. And he sits on a bench and he watches. And he observes. This is no ordinary observer. And he does not observe as people ordinarily observe. Because we already know that this is the Christ, the Son of the living God. It has already been made known to us and clear to us. He knows what's in the mind. He knows the thoughts. He knows what's going on, even if he's not there. Even if he's not present. Nathanael is brought to Jesus. And Jesus says, when he sees Nathanael coming, an Israelite in whom indeed there is no deceit, no dishonesty. A man honest with himself and a man honest with God. Now, I've paraphrased all of that to expand on what Jesus meant when he said, an Israelite in whom there is no guile, there is no deceit. And Nathanael says, how do you know me? What does Jesus say? While you were under the fig tree, I saw you. And Nathanael's response to that was, you are the Son of God. And Jesus said, you believe because I told you I saw you under the fig tree? You're going to see greater things than this. So Jesus not only knows what each individual is giving, he knows why. He knows every single thing about every giver that is giving. That's something we just don't let register, do we? Do you know that every action you and I take and every thought you and I have is open before God? There is not a single thing we do that is hidden. There is not a single thing that we think that is unknown. And what God is wanting from us is openness and honesty, because he already knows. And we will be held accountable for every action and for every thought and for every motive behind every action. Because he not only knows what we are doing, he knows why we're doing it. He not only knows what we say, he knows what we think. David said, "Such knowledge is too wonderful for me." That means it's scares me to death. Such knowledge is beyond my ability to comprehend. But this is God. And this is Jesus, God in the flesh. He doesn't need to hear. He doesn't need an announcement made. He knows everything that is given. And he sees all that is being given. And rich people, individuals who have a lot of this world's things, are giving a lot. And then this widow comes and she puts in how much?
Two mites.
Huh? Two mites. Word is lekas. The coin is so small, it's not even used all over Rome. The coin is so small, it's not even used in the eastern part of the Roman Empire. It's only used in the western part. The coin is so small, it is almost absolutely insignificant. I think the number was 352, I believe. I have to go back and check, but it was a pretty high number. Do you remember what a day's wages were? You know, a day's wage is, you work all day long, and this is how much you get, and that's pretty much how you measure things. It was either 132 or 332, I can't remember which one, it would take of these coins to make one day's wage. They are insignificant. To put it into our terms, the two coins together would make 1/4 of a cent. Now, I've got some pennies. When we went to the visitation the other night, Don and Joyce's dad passed away. There was a man that was visiting another family that was standing outside next to the men's restroom. And when I came out and I walked by, I said, something like, "Are you guys in line?" And they said, "Oh no, it's wide open. You can go ahead and go on in, but we're collecting the toll." And we all laughed, and I went on in. And so when I came out, I reached into my little change purse and I pulled out three pennies. And when I walked by him, he said, "Here, I want you to, I want to give you the toll that I owe you." And I gave him the three pennies. They meant nothing to me and they meant nothing to him, because we're even wondering in our country if we should even keep making pennies, because they become more of a nuisance than anything. I remember a time when a penny could get you something, and a penny could get you quite a bit. But now they don't amount to very much at all. Well, these two in her day, these two coins amounted to 1/4 of a cent. They were almost nothing. but it was all she had. Why two? Because that's what she had. But think about it a minute. She could have given one and kept the other. That would have been giving 50%. I doubt there would have been very many of the rich people who were giving 50%. What was required of them was the tithe, which is 10%. And a rich person giving 10% is giving a lot, especially in comparison to her. And she could have given one of them and kept the other one and been giving 50%, which is way above the tithe. But she gave both, which, again, what was going on? What motivated her to do this? What happened that would cause her to give in this way? We have no idea. Because of all that Jesus chooses to tell us, he tells us absolutely nothing about that. He simply tells us the amount that she gave, and it was both of these things. And then Jesus does what? If you got your Bible open, you can see. Something's happened here. Something has happened that I want people to know about. Something has happened that I want my disciples to know. So he calls over his disciples. And he says, I want to tell you this. But notice what he doesn't do. He wants them to know about what the woman has done. But it is not presented as, guys, here's how you tell folks to give. But it is how you tell folks to give. But not from the standpoint of every time somebody gives, this is the way I want you to give everything that you have. Because they don't give everything that they have. And when we come to the first giving in the book of Acts after the new church, there is a couple that is killed, not because they didn't give enough, but because they lied about what they were giving. Because when they gave the amount they gave, Peter says that would have been fine. You didn't have to sell your house. It was yours. You could have done with it what you wanted. When you sold it, you could have done what you wanted to with the money. You could have chosen what amount of it you were going to give and what amount of it you were going to keep. All of that was fine. It was under your control and under your choice. But when you messed up, was when you wanted the praise for giving more than you were giving. And so you lied about the amount that you were giving. And you've not lied to men, you've lied to the Holy Spirit. And for that reason, you both will die. And they both died, one at a time, and both were involved in the deceit. So it's not a lesson about the amount monetarily that you were to give. It's about something else. So Jesus points out to the disciples exactly what this woman did. Notice what he says. She has given more than whom? I hear whispers, but I don't hear. Than all of the others put together. So now we're introduced to the way God sees this. Well, now we're introduced to the way God is looking at this. And it's not the amount of money. It's the condition of the heart. And what motivates her to do this. What he's pointing to is the heart of this woman and the richness of her gift. And God, believe me, recognizes the richness of her gift. It is more than all of the others combined could have given. How so, Lord? Because all of the others gave what? Of their surplus, of their abundance. They gave part. All of the others gave a part of what they had. She gave what? Everything. Now, do you notice? What do you see in the phrase that Jesus uses? She gave everything, even all that she had to live on. What do you see in that phrase? Huh? Trust, okay. What about this? What about, okay, I've got to eat tomorrow, so I'll buy me a piece of bread, and what I have left over, I'll give. Wouldn't that have been mighty generous? Just let me take care of my essentials, what I have got to have to live tomorrow or to eat tomorrow, and then I will give the rest. That would be a very generous gift. But that's not what she did. She gave first and now had no means to eat tomorrow. Would it be all right to go without food tomorrow? Yes. Did she do that? I don't know. I don't know how God provided for her. Jesus doesn't tell us. Jesus just tells us that God will provide for the things that we need. God knows that we need them. And we see all kinds of examples of how that happens and takes place. It's even David who says, I was a young man and now I'm an old man, and I have never seen those who trust God begging for bread. Just his personal observation. I'm now an old man and I have never seen those who put trust in God begging for bread. This woman was taken care of. I don't know how. But what she gave was not what was left. It was essentials. What she had to have. And she gave it freely, and she gave it evidently gladly, and Jesus points us to her heart. Do you know she's not the first one? She's not the only one? Elijah prophesied there wouldn't be any rain, and there wasn't any rain for 3.5 years. And God told him to go to a brook and God would provide for him. And he went to a brook and he stayed there till the brook dried up. But while he was there, the ravens brought him meat and bread every morning and every evening. And he drank from the brook. When the brook dried up, God said, I want you to go to a widow who's over near Sidon. And I have put it into her heart to take care of you. She didn't know it. We don't know how God did it or what he did, but that's where Elijah goes. Jesus will use this story in his own hometown in the synagogue, and it'll make them so mad they want to take him out of town and throw him over a cliff. Because this story of this widow and the story of Naaman, both Gentiles, will prove that God is interested in all people. Because there were a lot of lepers in Israel in the day of Naaman the Syrian, but Naaman was the only one healed. And there were a lot of widows during that famine in the land of Israel, but it was only to this widow in Sidon that Elijah was sent to. And that so infuriated the Jews in Jesus' hometown, they wanted to kill him. Daring to say that God cared for them more than he cared for the Israelites at that time. Anyway, just real quick, and I'm going to have to hurry. I'm already past time. Huh? I got till 10 after, but I'm a minute past. Just real quick. So when Elijah goes, this is what he tells the woman. He sees the woman and she's gathering sticks. And he says to the woman, could you give me a jar of water so I can have a drink? And she's on her way to get the water for him. And he calls out after her. And by the way, while you're doing that, could you make me a little piece of bread so that I can eat? That's when she stops and she turns around to him and she says, that's why I'm gathering the sticks. I have a handful of flour and I have a little bit of oil in a jar and I'm about to go in and make a piece of bread for me and for my son. And it will be our last meal. And Elijah says to her, make a loaf of bread for me first. And then make a loaf of bread for you and for your son. Because the Lord God says, you will not run out of flour and you will not run out of oil until it rains again. And the woman's decision was not based out of sympathy for the man, nor out of guilt on her part. She was right to look after herself and her child, but it was based on faith in what this man said about what God would do. And so she goes in and she bakes a cake and she brings it out to Elijah and she goes back in and there's still a handful of flour and there's still a little bit of oil and she makes another one for her and her son and the next day it's still there and the next day it's still there and it's there for the rest of that 3.5 years. She gave all, just like this widow here in the book of Mark. That's not all. Paul writes to the church in Corinth for the second time, and he says, I want you to know about the Macedonians. They gave beyond what we ever imagined. They gave more than they were able to give. They gave out of their deep poverty and begged us to allow them to give. Putting others ahead of myself, serving others more than me, giving up of myself to give to others. It's exactly what Jesus did. It's exactly what this woman did. It's exactly what Jesus wants our attention to be brought to. The fact that we are to give and not be so focused on just ourselves.
I found my stuff. I said I found my stuff. I knew you'd thank you. Appreciate your concern, okay? Not that anybody else really cares. I didn't see anybody getting up looking for it, but my precious wife. I ran into her 3 times in the hall looking for it because she knew what a buffoon I would look like up here without my notes. Oh, Sean, would this congregation forgive me? Sean was out there and offered, where you go, Terry, I will go. No, wait, that was last night's lesson. He said, can I help you look for your Bible? What a wonderful servant. I'm just going to throw this out, and I'm going to talk about Sean tonight. Okay, what an attitude. This is the way I was going to start. But let me preface this by saying, if you have been in some of my classes on certain subjects, I've always included this particular part of it. When I was young in high school and I would go out for a date or something and being young and stupid at that time, oftentimes, you know, you might have plans of what you were going to do. And my mother used to tell me, the three of y'all have a good time. Do you know what she meant by that? God's going to be sitting right in the car with you. Now, I have to be honest with you, most of the time, that went right out the window, okay? But I won't tell you why, because I want to begin with this particular thought. Paul penned Corinthians 13, and he talks about love. He actually gives God's description of love. So anytime that you have people talking and they want to define love and so forth like that, send them to 1 Corinthians 13, because that is the true definition of love. But as we get down to the very end, he says something that's oftentimes hard for us. He says, now abides these three, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. Now, I thought that Jesus himself said that without faith, not Jesus, Paul said, without faith it is impossible to please God. For he that cometh to him must believe that he is, and that he's a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. We read various places in here that faith is a necessity in order to please God, in order to come to God, in order to be accepted of God. Why in the world would he say that love is greater than faith? Do you have any idea? I'm sorry? Okay? Faith will go away. When we leave this earth, faith is gone. Okay? Frank, you were going to say something. Okay? I want you to think about this. How did John the Apostle describe God? God is love. Okay? This is why we latch on to love. Okay. On so many occasions, we're taught that if you love me, you will keep my commands. If you love me, my commands are not even a burden to you. Now, I want you to think back, if you will, and I'm going to use this example, and I'm sure that many of you feel the same identical way even today. And I will have to tell you that I think that I probably feel stronger today than I did even young when we were dating. You think about your wives. Let's go back to when you first started dating. Okay, you were getting to know each other. Was there anything that you would not spend on her if that's what she wanted? Was there not any gift that you would give her to show her as a manifestation of how valuable she was in your life? Can you put yourself back to then? Do you remember? I don't see any heads nod. I think of many things. I used to work all week just to make enough money to where I could buy Juanita stuff. I couldn't buy her enough stuff. I just wanted to buy her stuff all the time. Actually, I was paying her off. But, I mean, we won't go there. But let me tell you where I'm going with this, okay? Where I'm going with this is what Dwayne touched on at the very beginning. Jesus had gone into the temple where they give, and Jesus is sitting there watching the people come by. I'm going to tell you what I thought about, okay? And it didn't dawn on me really until this afternoon after we talked, and that's how I started. I don't know how many times I sit right over here on my pew, and incidentally, I'm allowing Harry to sit in my pew tonight because I'm up here, but everybody here knows that the fourth row back is the Pruitt pew, okay? If you have visitors that come in here, make sure that they know that, because that's the Pruitt pew, okay?
First service.
At the first service, yeah. I'm not interested. There is only one service. That is the true service, okay? Who is she? And would you shut up? I'm doing the teaching here, okay? Where did she come from anyway?
Michigan.
Okay, I want you to listen to my point. Matter of fact, let me just talk to her for just a minute, okay? I want you to imagine, because you usually sit over here in the heathen row, okay?
Hey, but we're up front. We're in spitting section. Anything from the forward of four pews forward, you know, it's a spitting section.
Can we have the ushers come up here and get her out of here? My goodness, I've never seen anybody try to dominate a class. Now, where was I before I was so rudely interrupted? Let me tell you what I thought about this afternoon after we talked. I'm reading this thing, and I'm visualizing Jesus coming in here on Sunday morning, and Jesus sitting right next to me on the fourth pew, and the collection plate is passed, and we put in our check. And Jesus is just glancing at that. And I look over, and there he is. And I'm wondering if what he's thinking, where your treasure is, there's your heart also. That's what I thought about. Kind of concerns me a little bit. Because where my life situation is now, we have overspent. We've gotten ourselves to a situation where we've got to pay these bills off in order to keep a good credit rating. And when you do that, you're slighting somebody. And I thought about that. Where your treasure is, there's your heart. You know, we think, well, the Jews of earlier times gave 10%. Am I anywhere close to that? And I thought a little bit beyond that. As I'm partaking of the Lord's Supper, and I'm eating that bread, and he's sitting next to me, knowing what he did in order for me to do that, and he's looking at my heart, and is he pleased with what my mind is on and what your mind is on? But it goes beyond that, folks. It goes beyond the point of sitting out here in my fourth row pew listening to a sermon, and is my mind wondering, what is in this that is going to help me transform my mind? Or is it, well, this will be through in a few minutes and we go to class and we can get out of here and go eat? You see, I don't know why we think that because we show up for every service, that everything that we do in here is super pleasing to God. Now, I can't speak for you. I don't know, and I certainly wouldn't judge your motives or anything. I'm just talking about myself. Does this fit maybe where some of us are? Assuming responsibility that we have, if we're going to wear his name, do we not honor him in the way we act, in the way we think, the way we talk? I tell you what I'd like to do. I'd like to share with you a story that I think emphasizes the point of the story that Dwayne shared with us tonight. It's in Luke 16, and I'm only going to read verses 19 through 23. You can read along with me if you like. It's the parable of the rich man and Lazarus. But I want you to pay particular attention to this. There was a rich man. How much money did this guy have? I have no idea. You know, I might have been that person. You see, I have a house. I have a car. I have 2 bathrooms, 3 bedrooms. I have a swimming pool. I have a fish pond with a stream, and I have 10 fish in it. I have shirts and slacks and shoes, and there are literally millions of people on this earth that don't have anything near what I've got. But I don't view myself as rich. There was a rich man who was dressed in purple and fine linen and lived in luxury every day. At his gate laid a beggar named Lazarus, covered with sores and longing to eat what fell from the rich man's table. I don't think that I have ever missed a meal in my entire life, ever. It might not have been what I would like, but I've always had nourishment. Even the dogs came and licked his sores. This guy was in pretty bad shape, wasn't he? The time came when the beggar died, and the angels carried him to Abraham's side. The rich man also died and was buried, and in Hades, where he was in torment, he looked up and saw Abraham far away with Lazarus by his side. What's the lesson that Jesus is trying to teach here? A, the rich people are going to hell. Is that what he's teaching? That's in there. I just read it. Wait a minute. B, the poor are going to heaven. Was that what that lesson's about? That's what it said. Well, we know that that wasn't the gist of what Jesus talked about. Although it does appear that there is something that we need to consider. Now, first of all, the rich aren't necessarily going to hell. As I read the Bible, Abraham was a very wealthy person. And was he not called the father of the faithful? Did Jesus not hold him up as an example of one's trust in him? Job, I think, was fairly wealthy. He lost almost all of it up front, but it was restored to him. So I don't think that we can gather that all the wealthy are going to hell. And that's definitely not what he implied. Let me tell you what I see in that story. We don't look at things the way Jesus does. Now, you just think about your own life, and I'm well aware that we do an awful lot in the giving to the poor here at River Chase. Who do you associate with day in, day out? They're wealthy people, aren't they? Who do you go out to eat with? Wealthy people. Who do you invite over to your house? Wealthy people. Who do you sit with at church? Wealthy people. It just so happens, though, that you can use your wealth to the glory of God. And I have to tell you, this congregation is known for that. I mean, we help all over the world. And we don't need to apologize for that. I think what Jesus wants us to see is that things that pertain to this world are not what he views as valuable. If it were so, then whenever he sat there and watched the people put their money in, he would have congratulated and made an example of all the big bucks that were going in there. You talk about attitudes sometime. I actually heard this, and I don't remember where I heard it. There was a congregation where there was one of the leaders in this congregation, and one of the members who was worth a lot of money. It's almost like everything he touched turned to gold. And he was getting a little disenchanted with the way the worship was going and something like that. And he was thinking about leaving. And this leader said, "Boy, we can't afford to lose him, man. He puts a lot of money in." And I thought, since when is it about the volume or the mass of money that you put in. You see, we go through situations, and I have observed this all of my life. There is absolutely nothing wrong with it because we all need encouragement. But oftentimes, before we'll present a budget, we will have a lesson on the joy of giving, and that's what it is. Unfortunately, oftentimes we don't view it as a joy. We view it as a burden. But I think what we need to consider more than anything is the love of God. You know, if we can get that part right in our minds and view things the way Jesus and God viewed them, we wouldn't have to worry about finances, would we? You know, if somebody in the congregation lost a job, they wouldn't have to worry about it. I'm going to tell you, we're good at caring for the body of Christ. This goes on all the time. You may not be aware of it, but the funds that we give here are used extremely wise. And we need to thank our leadership for that. But let's shift gears just a minute. How much time do I have to run? 8 minutes, okay? I'm going to really shift and go fast on this. Have you ever thought about the people that Jesus praised? In the Gospels, the number of people that Jesus praised. I just want to hit three. Dwayne and I were talking about, they're not a lot. They're not a lot in there, but I want to mention just a few. In Matthew 16, 13 through 19, you know that story. Peter was praised by Jesus. This was when Jesus was asking his disciples, who do men say that I am? And they were saying all these things, and he says, Peter, who do you say that I am? And Peter said, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus said, my Father has revealed that to you. And he went on, before he said that, he said, blessed are you. Did he not? Why in the world was Peter blessed if God revealed it to him? I'll tell you why. Because when God told him, he took it as face value and believed every single word of it. God also told Eve, don't eat of the fruit of that tree. She heard it with her own ears, spoken from either Adam or God. And she believed a lie. Now, Peter didn't. This is why he was praised. Because he heard the message and he believed it. And he allowed it to mold his thinking. There was another one. It was a night when Jesus, this was shortly before his crucifixion, matter of fact. He was dining at the home of Simon the leper. There was a woman, and that's all it says, there was a woman that came to him with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume. I don't know what very expensive is. I don't wear Polo cologne anymore because it's very expensive. And I'm not going to pay that for it. I smell good without it. Okay? But this woman came and had a jar of very expensive perfume and she poured it on Jesus' head. And the disciples were indignant about it. And Jesus said, leave this woman alone. He said, truly I tell you, whenever this gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in her memory. Why did he praise her? Because she wasted expensive perfume? I don't think so. Because her act of love. She could have taken that perfume, done anything that she wanted to. But what was important to her was using a prize that she owned to honor Christ. And then there was the centurion. Do you remember the centurion? one of his servants was sick, and he sent word to Jesus. Jesus comes. He sends words out to him. And of course, this centurion knew that a Jew does not enter the residence of a Gentile. How he knew that, I don't know. Peter made that plain whenever he went to Cornelius' house, and he went in and says, "You know that I'm not supposed to be here. It's not proper for a Jew to associate with a Gentile." So that's the same situation here. This guy had so much respect for Jesus that he didn't want him coming into his house. He did not feel anywhere worthy of it. And he says, "All you have to do, say the word and my servant would be healed." Say the word. This guy was not a child of God. And yet, he had so much confidence in Jesus that he says, "Don't come into the house. Just say the word and he'll be healed." Jesus said, "I have not seen this much faith in Israel." And praised him for it. So what do we see from this story of the widow and the woman who washed his hair, for the centurion, for Peter? What do we see about these stories? It's what God sees that's important. God saw an act of kindness by a woman that had something of value, and she loved him so much that she wanted to use that for him. And he had so much praise for a heathen that said, "All you have to do is say the word, Lord, and he'll be healed." Do we miss the point? We talked last night about transformation. When we are truly transformed, we will see people through the eyes of God. When we get on that interstate and we're trying to move in and this guy's coming down and he won't let us in, rather than becoming angry and frustrated and irritated and maybe even possibly showing the Hawaiian peace sign, we will view that person differently. I used to tell our teens, when you love God to the point that you begin to think like he does and you're out on a date and she may be willing, but you view her through the eyes of God and you love her soul more than you love her body, that's when you see through the eyes of God. This story was not about how much money she put in, because Jesus has made that very plain. You know what he wants from you? Do you know what he wants from you? Everything you've got. He gave everything that he had to you, and he expects no less from you. Now, here's where we've got to be careful. What we put in the collection plate, we have full assurance that that is going to be used to God's glory. Whew. I have to tell you, that part we hold back, that part we put in our checking account to use for us, how wisely are we using that to his glory? The lesson is yours. Let's think about looking at things through the eyes of God. Okay? Thank you. Good class. Good group. Appreciate you being here. Tomorrow night's the last one, isn't it? We're going to talk about washing smelly feet tomorrow night. Oh, smelly, stinky feet. Okay? Would y'all all do me a favor tomorrow before you come here tomorrow night? I want to put some things to a test, okay? Would y'all mind going to a farm and walking through some cow paddies barefooted? When you come here tomorrow night, we're going to see how much we trust Jesus, and we're going to see who's going to wash some feet. Y'all want to do that tomorrow night? Y'all want to try it? Huh? Nah, we don't want to try that. Mm-mm. We'd rather just be taught the value of washing dirty feet. Maybe at some point in our lives, we'll understand. Okay? Good class. Thank you. Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. Please don't anybody. Bob was going to the farm right now to walk through. Listen, Bob, you can't do that. They will not allow cow patty feet on the red carpet. Forget it, okay?
I did that when I was young.
I hear you, Bob. I think aren't there refreshments in the thing over here? So y'all go get refreshed.